Good day and welcome to our final episode of season 14, where we've been analysing film adaptations from anything besides novels, which I covered specifically in season 8. Check that one out. But this season we have delved into everything else besides novels. And so far we've had cartoons, DC comic books, husband and wife collaborations on scripts, theme park rides, and now Marvel comic books. And for this last episode for this season, I want to take a look at the Fox Studio take on the Marvel superhero team, The Fantastic Four. Released in 2005 and directed by Tim Story, the film stars Ian Grudford, Jessica Alba, Chris Evans, Michael Chiklis, Julian McMahon, and Kerry Washington. Season 8 we did adaptations, and Season 10 we covered the MCU, and this film could have fallen into either one of them. Hell, it could even fallen into Season 4, but curiously this film falls into this season, Season 14, that's right. This is 4 years before the birth of Iron Man, meaning it was excluded from Season 10. The Fantastic Four are one of the OGs of the Marvel Universe. Kirby and Lee first launched this famous four back in 1961. However, the Human Torch was, and alongside Submariner, has the distinct record of being the earliest ever Marvel character to be developed back in 1939 by Carl Burgos, which officially means Fantastic Four consists of the oldest ever member of Marvel, thereby giving Fantastic Four the title itself, since the foursome were combined as one unit. I mean, it wasn't really until 1961 did Jack Kirby and Stan Lee construct the actual Fantastic Four, placing the already existing Human Torch alongside Ben Grimm's The Thing, Susan Storm's The Invisible Woman, and Reed Richards' Mr. Fantastic. Naturally, going on trend, we have two out of the four with alliterative names, one that personifies his personality and power, and the other that describes his nature and origin in a sense. The Fantastic Four were the first ever superhero team generated by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, years before the Eternals, the X-Men, the Runaways, the Guardians, and of course, the Avengers. Like almost every tight-knit superhero and non-superhero family, despite their strengths and popularity, the story is driven by the dysfunctional relationship between any mixture of two within the four themselves, holding grudges, personal rivalries, love-hate relationships, marital issues, which runs in the realms of petty and just old, good old sibling rivalry. Inside the four consists of siblings, lovers, best friends, competitive pilots, dick measuring that exists within four different personalities that range from Johnny Storm's arrogance to Reed's intellect to Ben's grumpy but military thinking jock friend and Sue, who centers the macho bravado in a group with her clear dominance, who arguably holds the most destructive power, a force field, topped with her invisibility. The other interesting thing about the Fantastic Four is that instead of keeping their secret identities like a majority of the superheroes do, they are known by their true identities in true celebrity status, similar to Tony Stark. So the rumour goes that in 1960, DC had published the Justice League of America, and Stan Lee had noticed that this comic book from DC was selling better than any of the others, including their Marvel comic books. So it was an instant hit, the Justice League, merging known superheroes into one comic. And Stanley thought, well, why don't we do our own version that involves a team of superheroes? And a year later, The Fantastic Four was born. It was a surprise success when it debuted in November in 1961, which was a catalyst for Stanley staying on with Marvel and creating more heroes and continuing to do his work with them. Because before this, he had seriously considered quitting, and he had made that quite known. So you can sort of thank the popularity of The Fantastic Four for the revival or second stage of Marvel comic universe. But anyway, let's talk about 2005. So this is the middle of the Tobey Maguire trilogy of Spider-Man, and things are looking hot in terms of superhero movies. A sequel with Doc Ock did quite well. X-Men was on the scene. Blade was a success. And they thought, why not see if we can revamp another hero? And in comes 20th Century Fox. This film wasn't the first version. Roger Corman produced one in 1994, Fantastic Four, which was, I mean, it never really saw the light of day. I mean, you can get it on like some VHS or some back corridor on eBay due to the rights, but they weren't really being secured properly, and the film never saw the light of day on TV. And then we skip now to 2005 when we have the film in question, the version that everyone likes, I think the one that is the most popular. So Peyton Reed, who would go on to direct the Ant-Man trilogy, pitched The Fantastic Four in 2003, describing it as a Hard Day's Night, but with superheroes. In case you haven't seen that, that's the film about the Beatles. Great film. And it was almost greenlit too, with Paul Walker as Johnny Storm, John C. Reilly as The Thing, Alistair Dennis as Reed Richard, and Charlize Theron as Sue Storm. Anyways, it never got any further because the script wasn't accepted by the studios, and the commitment from the actors and the directors kept running dry due to the new project, so that fell through. They tried again a a couple of years later and they agreed on a script, they got their rights and they went again, and this time with a green lit with Tim Story attached to the direct. They chose Tim Story after his work on the Barbershop movies that he did in 2002 and 2004. Tim Story's work was revolutionary for a lot of reasons as well. I mean, the movie did well, yes, but Jessica Alba met her husband, Cash Warren, on the set of this movie, who was Tim Story's assistant, and this marked the highest grossing movie to be directed by an African-American up to that point. I think the one before was Scary Movie 3. So, was a scary movie? Yeah, it was Scary Movie 3. So Fox had their movie. They even casted 25 of their own employees in this movie in cameo roles for some God knows reason, but, you know, it's quite cool. So the movie came with a sequel 2 years later with the same cast, Rise of the Silver Surfer, which did all right too, box office-wise. A reboot was done in 2005 and followed the same trajectory as the 1994 version. Josh Trank directed it with Miles Teller and Jamie Bell on the film Tank, leaving the film in question, the one in 2005. The only respectable version available that deals with the Fantastic Four. I mean, they show up briefly in Doctor Strange, the Multiverse of Madness, and an alternative universe. In fact, just Reed does. But we'll be waiting until Phase 6 as a new Fantastic Four has been announced, and the casting has still been left mysterious in nature. I think Vanessa Kirby is the only strong rumor to be casted as of today. Actually, saying that, as of today, I think Pedro Pascal has been rumored to play Reed Richards, but we'll see what happens there. But in conclusion, the 2005 movie and its cast remain the only acceptable version of the film to date. So Ian Gruffudd got the role of Reed Richards, someone who hasn't really played a lead in a major Hollywood film ever. I think he did smaller roles before this, like in Titanic, in 102 Dalmatians, Another Life, Black Hawk Down. So the Welsh actor was pleased to break the news to his parents, who happened to come visit him on set the one day he was filming a really mediocre scene in an elevator, so good timing. The only other actors considered for Reed Richards was George Clooney and Brendan Fraser at the time. Going with an outside did justice because it's an ensemble part, you know, ensemble cast, so the mixture of all four complements each other. I don't think it would have worked with four A-listers in each individual role. In this film, Reed has his sort of fashion statement of this powerful white streaks in his hair. In the comics, Reed just has white streaks, but in the film, it's apparently caused by the cosmic rays. He was 30 at the time, and Jessica Alba was 23, which is quite young considering Reed and Susan are depicted in being in their late 30s, possibly 40s, throughout the comics. But it worked out quite well at the time this came out, kind of like freshness to it. And just for those geeks and comic book fans, Sue Storm is the oldest of the two siblings, Johnny being the irresponsible young one, but in real life, Jessica Alba and Chris Evans are 3 months apart, both born in 1981. So Chris Evans famously played Johnny Storm. The rumor was that Marvel asked Chris Evans to play Captain America 3 times before he accepted. And they did that so they would stop him making another Fantastic Four movie because they had massive plans for the Fantastic Four down the line, which we still to this date haven't seen yet. So it's a massive thing coming. So I guess they needed the time to buy the rights, which is why we never got a third movie to close up the trilogy. Chris Evans must have the record, I think, for the most comic book films he's in Fantastic Four, 2 of them. He's Captain America. God knows how many times he's played Captain America, over 6 or 7 times. He's in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. He's in Scott Pilgrim. He's in The Losers. He's in a film called Push. He's in Snowpiercer, all based on comic books. So quite the list is racked up. I mentioned Snowpiercer earlier. It was interesting because Jamie Bell was in that. He plays the younger brother of Chris Evans. And Jamie Bell would later go on to play Ben Grimm in the failed attempt of Fantastic Four in 2015. So that was quite a cool connection. Interestingly as well, when he played Ben Grimm, he played against Kate Mara as Susan Storm. And they would go on to get married in real life. Kind of like how Cash Warren and Jessica Alba went on to get married. So the Fantastic Four is a place for people to meet and get married, I guess. But anyway, let's talk about Michael Chiklis. He played Ben Grimm, aka The Thing, which is a very iconic role in the two movies. A standout performance, I would say. So good, in fact, that Stanley is on record in saying that his performance was his favorite performance ever in any Marvel movie. And that includes the MCU movies. So he probably was just a massive fan of The Thing or just a massive fan of The Shield. I don't know, but he was phenomenal in it. He did go through the wars in this film. There was no CGI used. It was purely an outfit. It was a suit that weighed quite a bit, 60 pounds of latex. He also had to wear prosthetic teeth and had to learn to talk with them on, which was quite a thing to do. And out of the four characters, he was the only one familiar with the Fantastic Four comics. He's a little bit older than the rest, so he knew quite a bit about the characters. Jennifer Garner was actually the person that got him the role after suggesting him to Tim Story, which, you know, and I think that same year as well, she also had her own superhero movie out, which was Elektra, which is a spin-off to the Daredevil movie. So, yeah, quite interesting too. It's a top-notch cast where all of them arguably went on to do better things after this movie. I mean, it would catapult everyone and put them on the map, especially Ian Gridford. I mean, before that, he wasn't doing any leads. After this, he was. So they're an important part of history, the Fantastic Four of the Marvel Comics. They launched the Silver Age, spawning decades of incredible comics lore revolving around this cosmic group of explorers. And one thing I love that is that this film is a massive homage to the comics. Okay, yes, Doctor Doom does in fact get his powers like the rest of them because he's out there like the rest of them, but they decided to separate the heroes from the villains instead of creating an interesting story arc for the villain that could make us feel sorry for him. They sort of touched upon it in the 2015 version of Tobey Kebbell's Doctor Doom, but with a film where you have to introduce four individual superheroes, each with their explosive personalities and unique powers, it's hard to fit that emotional arc with a fifth character. You need time to adapt, and I really hope that they get it right in phase six. I mean, the one and only focus is the character development for the Fantastic Four. It's something that they didn't really pull off with the Eternals. So many good characters, but just not enough screen time. It was almost wasted. They should have done a TV show with it instead, I think. The Fantastic Four are special, and despite their bickering, the Fantastic Four are a model of a strong family life, setting aside differences to help one another, forgiving faults, and living self-critical lives for the good of mankind. I mean, their personal relationships takes a battering because of their identities being completely known to the world. There is no hanging up the cape. There is no hiding. They will always be known as the Fantastic Four. I mean, the making of this film was well worth the time and effort, because still today, this for me is still the only half-decent version of these superheroes. And what I mean by effort, I mean Jessica Alba had a kidney infection during the whole filming of this movie. Michael Chiklis was just terribly uncomfortable throughout the entire movie. He even said that his favorite moments when filming was when he was Ben Grimm, not the Thing. The costume just took a massive toll on him. And like I said, the prosthetic teeth. I mean, Ian Gridford could nail the American accent to hide his Welsh accent, but because of rewrites to the script, that proved a challenge for Ian when he had to relearn the lines with the American accent hours before filming the scene. And I think Chris Evans was fine. He probably had a great time doing this movie. He looked like he was having a good time. I mean, he improvised most of his lines in this film. I mean, there's this bridge sequence which took 5 weeks to shoot, which is 3 weeks over expected. Johnny morphing into a ball and flying over Manhattan took 4 months to produce behind the scenes. There was a lot of time and effort that went into this movie. The writing is half decent in my opinion. Yeah, they have these cute little foreshadowing moments, like when Victor comments on Reed stretching for the stars and Ben doing all the heavy lifting. But the beauty of this film is the little references to the original source material that the comics had to offer. The cosmic storm being depicted as bullet rays are direct visual cues from the original Jack Kirby works in the very first issue. And also notice how in the film it gives you hints of their powers when they are blasted with the cosmic rays. Ben smashing into a truck in the comics is the exact angle, in fact, in the comic books. Johnny racing a missile is what he does in the comic books as well, which you now expect to have that bar at that highness when dealing with popular comic books. You need to have these references, even if you've never read them. Unfortunately, though, even though I sing praises about this film, this superhero family haven't lived its I don't think it's fulfilled its full potential on the live action screen. The film spends the majority of the time dealing with the characters coming to terms and discovering their newfound powers after an accident in space. Already there, we have the character development of four to five major characters, four heroes and one villain. We have the establishment of every two of those characters with each other. That's Sue and Reed's past romance. That's Sue and Johnny's sibling rivalry. That's Johnny and Ben's macho rivalry. That's Ben and Reed's loyal relationship. That's Ben and Sue's work colleagues. That's Reed and Johnny's friendship via Susan. So you have all these relationships to establish. The accident itself, their powers, what it is and how they handle it. If one thing, it's amazing that, you know, like Johnny to one thinking it's awful, like Ben. You know, Johnny thinks it's great, Ben thinks it's awful. And then the equilibrium being broken with Victor, how he becomes evil and why. So there's a lot to unpack, and they managed to do most of that in the first 15 minutes because they need to get on with the movie. There's clearly a lot to handle when it comes to the Fantastic Four. This is what happens when you deal with a fantastic group. I mean, when you have the Avengers, we had like six or seven films that led up to it. So you had that character development over six or seven films. In the Fantastic Four, you've got literally 2 hours to do this. So yeah, there's a lot to handle when it comes down to the writing and directing and knowing what you need to show and what to miss. The film needs time to marinate with the audience before it gets heavy. The film, however, takes no time establishing power and shenanigans. Like I said, within 15 minutes, you know, the board are already, they're already on board the space shuttle, and that soon hits a disastrous storm, doomed for their glory, which creates a basis for the rest of the story. Despite making enough money that to suggest that this film was a hit with audiences, I mean, there was some people were impressed with it, some weren't. I mean, certain critics gave it a really low score. Metacritic rating, I think, was low as 27%. But Hollywood didn't really care because it made money and they greenlit immediately the second movie with the same cast, and which apparently didn't stay that true to the comics. But nonetheless, it produced an okay film financially wise. And, you know, that's the thing. But that debate will always arise when you convert something from its source material and the differences that are in play. I mean, the problem with 2005's film is, despite the budget of, what, $100+ million and still making profit, this was also the year two other comic book movies came out. Like I said, Elektra came out this year, which didn't do that well. But then there was Christopher Nolan's Batman Begins that also came out this year. So it was a rather vibrant compare. I'd say Fantastic Four was the most vibrant one compared to the others, since Nolan was gritty and Elektra was dark, seeing when her character died in Daredevil. So Fantastic Four was one of the three that offered the spectacle that did somehow overcompensate for a plot, because we don't really know what Doctor Doom is so angry about. Okay, maybe that Sue likes Reed, but enough to destroy the world? I don't know, that's sort of stretching a little bit. Also, how quickly they adapt to their life-altering superheroes like it's an Oprah Winfrey makeover. I mean, this is why the next time they take a stab at this film, they need to make sure they get the tone and the pacing right, the plot and the character development right, because without any of those three not firing, we're in trouble. And I guess that's the same for any movie, I guess, but with something as, you know, delicate as a Fantastic Four, something that is known universally, they just want to get this perfect. But anyway, that's all I have time for with the Fantastic Four. Always had a soft spot with this particular Marvel family and journey, with the iconography of the Baxter Building, the car, the sub-characters like Dr. Doom and Willy Lumpkins, who, by the way, is played by Stan Lee. I think this is the first time he actually plays an actual Marvel character instead of just a cameo. But I am personally invested in any single member of the four. They have my highest regards, and I have extremely high expectations for what Phase 6 has to offer with Fantastic Four when it's rebooted for 2024/2025. Let's hope they get it right. I mean, Pedro Pascal has been rumored to play Reed Richards. I'm not entirely sure how I feel about that, but we'll see how it goes. But anyway, you can find me on Instagram. That's Film Exploration, A-H or lowercase or one word. And you can subscribe to me on Spotify, iTunes, Google, and Amazon. And I'm also spending a lot of time co-hosting on another podcast, Quantum Recasts, who are the next big thing. Check them out. Give them a follow. They're awesome. But this is it for season 14 for the time being. I shall be back with season 15 with regular updates on my Instagram on the releases of those episodes and what the theme might be. But for now, thank you for tuning in to Film Exploration with Ash Hari.